I wanted to welcome everybody today to the EPA 4 grant writing workshop. It's going to be held from 10 to 12. The presentation will most likely take an hour and a half to be followed by a 30-minute question and answer session. My name is Wendy Spillane with SRA International. I will be moderating today's session. I wanted to cover a few housekeeping items on how to navigate through the presentation as well as how to mute and unmute your phone. If you have a mute button, you can use that, or you can hit *6 to place your phone on mute and #6 to remove your phone from mute. We ask that you put your phone on mute for the entire duration of the presentation, and then feel free to unmute it when you want to ask questions at the end of the presentation. And we also ask that you do not place the phone on hold, as a lot of organizations have music and it can be disruptive, as it'll play to everyone as we have the presentation. If you go to the seminar button and you can click and go to the home page of the actual presentation, you should see that there's a lot of navigation buttons above the presentation. The left and right arrows allows you to move one slide forward or one slide back, and each of the presenters will be letting you know which slide they're on as they're speaking, and as they start, it will have several speakers. Also, if you hit the home button, you'll go back to the main page, and that's where you'll find the links where you can actually download the presentation and save it for later, as well as some other information that will be posted later. If you hit the question button, you'll be actually able to submit a question online, and we encourage you to do so. You can ask them verbally at the end, but throughout, as something occurs to you, you can actually submit a question online as you follow along. And all questions will either be answered at the end of the session, or depending on their level of complexity, we might, no matter what, we're going to be summarizing all the questions and posting them a couple days after the workshop so that everybody can access them. Also, if you experience technical difficulties, you can also submit a question. Just please provide your phone number and a technical assistance person will call you back. So I think with that, we are ready to kick off this session. I wanted to turn you over to Region 4's Mike Norman, who will kick off the meeting and introduce you to the rest of the speakers.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the call. This is Mike Norman. I'm the Brownfields Coordinator for EPA Region 4. My name and contact information are in the proposal guidelines that came out on the 15th of August, and we'll also provide the names and contact information for the speakers here as well. I want to introduce you to the speakers that will be presenting today. They're all Brownfields project officers managing Brownfields grants, like the ones that we're going to be talking about here today. Our speakers include Kathleen Curry, Olga Perry, Nicole Comic-Bates, Margaret Crow, Brian Holtzclaw, and Wanda Jennings, and they'll all introduce themselves individually as they come on to speak here. I'll also try to give you the number of the slides just so you can keep up. We're not going to read from the slides, but we are going to use them to talk from, and they'll provide a useful source of information for you as well as you work on your grant proposals. I'm going to move right on slide number 5. Our mission here is to protect human health and the environment. That's our mission with the Brownfields program. It's the mission with all of the media programs that EPA operates, our air programs, water programs, Superfund, and whatnot. But we believe that the revitalization of contaminated properties actually goes hand in hand with our mission here. There are a variety of benefits to revitalization. A recent study that we've produced shows that brownfield sites accommodated the same number of homes and businesses on about a quarter to a half the land typically used at greenfield sites. It showed significant reduction in average daily vehicle miles traveled, about 59% from between that and brownfields and greenfields, 60% reduction in air pollutant emissions relative to greenfield development, and reductions in stormwater runoff up to 72%. In addition to that, reuse of properties increases local tax base, facilitates job growth, prevents sprawl, and produces a variety of other benefits. So we really believe in this program and the benefits that it can provide. Our brownfields definition, and this is the definition from the statute, is real property, the expansion, redevelopment, or reuse of which may be complicated by the presence or potential presence of hazardous substances, pollutants, or contaminants. Potential presence is an important fact because often properties are stigmatized by the concern that there may be presence of problem substances there that would require great deals of cost to study and remediate. Moving right along, eligible sites under the brownfields program include sites contaminated with hazardous substances, pollutants or contaminants, petroleum contamination, controlled substances such as meth labs, and mine-scarred lands. Since 1995, we've given over $500 million out in grants through our pilot program and our post-law program. That $500 million has been leveraged by an additional nearly $10 billion in cleanup and redevelopment funding, generating over 43,000 jobs. Our competitive grant program, this is slide 11, it is a very competitive process. Only about a third of the proposals submitted will actually get selected for funding. There were about last year about 800 proposals submitted. A little under 300 grants proposals were selected, and for a total of nearly $71 million in funding. Here in Region 4, we fared very well. With 43 proposals selected for $9.2 million in funding. I'm on slide 13 now, and every state in our region, we had successful applicants from every state in our region, and this slide just gives you a breakdown of the types of the funding that went to each state and the types of funding that went out, broken down by assessment, revolving loan fund, cleanup. Our application process actually started last week on August 15th with the notice of availability published. You have now until October 12th to prepare your proposals and submit them, and we hope that by early March, sometime in March, to make the announcements of those who were successful. Yeah, and there is a correction to that slide, March 2008. The evaluation process, I'll just break it down very generally. We start out looking, reviewing the proposals for threshold criteria. That's whether the applicant is available, whether the site for site-specific proposals are available or eligible. Then we go into what we call our national ranking panel reviews. The proposals submitted from here in Region 4 will actually be reviewed by other regions. We will be reviewing other proposals from other regions as well, other than Region 4. And the selection is actually done in headquarters. Generally, we go with the highest scoring proposals. Last year, that's what we did. We are also able to consider additional policy considerations. For example, in past years, we looked at areas where there were hurricane damages to make some selection. And again, the announcements planned for early March 2008. I'm going to move on. I'm on slide 16 now. What kind of funding is available? And before I go into the various types of grants here, I want to just mention who can apply. Generally, these grants are for state or local governments, regional councils of governments or tribes. Nonprofits can apply for the cleanup grants. So on slide 17, the assessment grant program is generally to develop inventories of brownfields properties and then characterize, assess those properties, or conduct planning related to redevelopment of the site. You can apply for community-wide grants or apply site-specifically. These are for cases up to $200,000 for hazardous substances, petroleum, site-specific grants. You can apply for up to $350,000 in funding with an approved waiver. There is a limit to two grants per applicant, and the guidelines actually discuss how those can be broken down. You can apply site-specifically for hazardous substances, for example, and perhaps community-wide for petroleum, but there are a variety of combinations available for you to apply. You do have to write separate proposals for a hazardous substance grant and a petroleum grant. And this is just one example of a success story that we had where an assessment of a dry cleaner in Jackson, Mississippi eventually led to redevelopment as a police substation. Now I'm going to move along to the Revolving Loan Fund program, grant program on slide 19. The Revolving Loan Fund program provides for funding to set up a program to lend money for cleanups or to grant money to provide sub-grants. Up to $1 million per applicant is available. There is a 20% cost share for these grants. Up to 40% of this funding can be given out as sub-grants. At least 60% has to be provided as loans, and coalitions of government can apply for these. On the next slide, you'll see one of the Revolving Loan Fund success stories, the Malibu Bay apartment complex in Palm Beach, Florida, where a 260-plus unit apartment complex was developed on a former golf course property down there. Excuse me. On slide 21, our cleanup grant program is designed to carry out cleanup activities on brownfield sites. These grants are for up to $200,000 per property. You can apply for up to three properties, but you must submit separate proposals for each one. There's also a cost share of 20% for these. And these, as I mentioned earlier, are grants that nonprofits can apply for. One key factor here is that you need not own the property at the time of application, but you must own the property by June 30th of 2008 in order to receive the actual grant funding.
Crystal, Carl Gabriella, when I logged into the she put a double T on my name, okay.
Okay.
Excuse me. Please put your phone on mute by pressing star 6.
Okay, and this is just an example of a cleanup success story that we had where we had underground storage tanks and other environmental issues that were cleaned up and led to the development of a soccer field for the Atlanta Youth Soccer Association. And a couple of contacts we have. We have some other programs available, the Job Training Grant Program, which is, the announcement is forthcoming. Kathleen Curry, who will be speaking a little bit later, is our contact for that, and here's her information. We also provide for targeted brownfields assessments. We have a very limited amount of funding here at EPA, and it's not a competitive program, but we can conduct assessments on properties as well, and Olga Perry is the contact for that, and her information is also on this slide. Now I'm moving on into getting started, and I'm going to move on to slide 25. And that slide actually gives you the link to where you can find the proposal guidelines. I want to emphasize that our goal is to provide you with some tips for putting together winning proposals, but it's not a substitute for thoroughly reading the guidelines. We're not going into every aspect of the guidelines in great detail. So I encourage you to read the guidelines and follow them very closely. The deadline again for the grants is October 12th, and that's when it has to be postmarked. Or you can also use grants.gov to submit your applications. So again, read the guidelines thoroughly. There is on slide 26 a link to a website where you can find information on previous successful grantees. You may want to contact them to see if you can get some information from them about their proposals. Make sure that when you're writing these proposals that you create standalone documents. The people that will be reviewing them will be from somewhere outside of the Southeast, and they don't likely know a whole lot about your community or any of the other good things that you might have going on there. And so write them as though the reader knows nothing about them. Address all the criteria, and the proposal guidelines actually give the amount of weighting and scoring for each of these criteria. If it doesn't apply to you, be sure to say that it doesn't apply and explain why not. Please, if you could, just minimize the use of acronyms or other technical jargon. On slide 27 now, there's an 18-page limit to the proposals. We are posting on the CLUIN website a tool that attempts to break out the number of pages according to the scoring criteria. For example, there are some criteria that carry a weight of 27 points out of the 132, and versus other areas that only get you 5 points maximum. Be sure to emphasize and put a lot of thought and effort and text into those areas that give you the highest scores. We've often seen those areas, those portions of the proposals addressed with the least amount of text, and so really focus on that. If you could, please limit the number of attachments. We have to copy these documents and ship them to other regions. And I also want to mention that if you do go over the 18-page limit, your document actually gets truncated. We don't consider any pages that are over 18 pages there. As far as photos go, they don't copy real well. If they're good and clear, and you feel like it would add a lot to the proposal, go ahead and add them. That should be part of the attachment. Again, be sure that if you're applying for more than one grant program, to submit separate proposals there, particularly for assessments where you're doing a petroleum assessment grant and a hazardous substance assessment grant. Okay, so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kathleen Curry, who's going to talk about our threshold criteria.
Good morning, all. Thank you for attending. Basically, the threshold criteria covers your eligibility, qualifications, and ownership. Looking at slide 30, we have the majority of our applicants are for community-wide. And under threshold, that doesn't take much to respond to the criteria there. We suggest that you use anywhere from a quarter to one page length only for community-wide threshold responses. Again, with that in mind, saving the majority of your pages for your ranking criteria where you are scored. Threshold is pass/fail. There is no scoring for threshold. However, it is important because if you do not respond correctly, you can be found ineligible for applying for the grant. Moving on to slide 31, or rather, yeah, 31. The contents of the threshold deals with your applicant eligibility, your state letter, and site eligibility and property ownership when it's a site specific, wherein that's where you'll need more pages to respond to your thresholds criteria. That's for assessment. For the revolving loan fund, again, applicant eligibility, the description of your jurisdiction, your state letter, your authority for oversight, and how you will construct that management of the oversight. Your cost share, and that's 20%, and your legal authority to manage a revolving loan. For the cleanup grant, again, we have the applicant eligibility, the state letter, site eligibility, and property ownership, and this is where you must own the property. Up for assessment, you don't have to necessarily own the property, but you must include in there that you have written access to the property and where you'll cover any kind of conflict. And under cleanup, again, your cost share. Slide 32. These are the important points for your threshold. Cover your applicant eligibility. Make sure you include a currently dated state letter, site eligibility and property ownership responses, cleanup authority and oversight structure, your cost share, description of your jurisdiction, and legal authority. And where the asterisks are, again, those are for a revolving loan and cleanup grants only. In the guidelines of page 14 and 15, look for more on applicant eligibility. But basically, those are municipalities, cities, states, tribes, quasi-governmental organizations, nonprofit organizations that own the property, and that, again, is for cleanup grants, and coalitions for a revolving loan fund. Slide 34, when providing the state letter, it must be specific and it must acknowledge your environmental authority that the applicant plans to conduct, oversee, assessment, and or cleanup activities and to apply for the grant funds. It can't be a general letter of correspondence showing state involvement. It must be a specific letter. Useful tips. Make sure the state letter has a current date with each proposal submitted. Make sure that you contact your state or tribal agency in enough time prior to the deadline to receive the letter. For site and property ownership eligibility, we have a general rule that the polluter pays. So therefore, there will be no funding by law to anyone that may be potentially liable under CERCLA for any type of contamination on the property in question. So basically, the liability depends on how and when the site was acquired and sold, as well as the site eligibility on how and when the site was acquired. The site and property ownership eligibility requirements apply to all brownfields programs. Slide 37, the common acquisition scenarios are foreclosure, and that's by a formal legal process, purchase, donated properties, and eminent domain. Slide 38, the sites are not eligible if they are listed on the national priorities list. If they're subject to a unilateral administrative order, court orders, administrative orders on consent, judicial consent decrees, or entered onto by parties under a CERCLA suit. Property subject to the jurisdiction, custody, and control of the United States government, and that includes land and trust by the United States government for a tribe. Exception. Land and trust by the U.S. government for a tribal entity is eligible. site to plan a property specific determination. These are circle removal actions that are ongoing or planned, and where you have a permit by the federal government or state government under RCRA or Toxic Substances Control Act or Safe Drinking Water Act. Slide 40. Sites requiring property specific determination again. These are properties subject to RCRA corrective actions or submitted to a RCRA closure notification and subject to closure requirements specified in a closure plan or permit. Property facility has a PCB release and subject to remediation on the TSCA. That's the Toxic Substances Act, Control Act again. Or properties or facilities receiving funds under the Lust Land Trust. Tip for threshold site and property ownership. At a minimum, please, petroleum site determination. I'm sorry, turn it over to Olga now.
Good morning. Olga Perry, and I will be covering slides 41 through 48. Under site and property ownership eligibility sooner only, at a minimum, applicants must have a phase one completed. They must have a phase two at a minimum on the way or completed. It's better, of course, if it's completed because you're able to provide additional information. But you must have enough to describe your cleanup plans and your estimated cost. That will add value to your ranking portion. Under petroleum site determination, petroleum sites, or at least applicants for petroleum sites, must provide their information to the Lust contact for your state. This information is available through your state. Please contact them for a specific name or specific contact person because you will need to include that information in your proposal. I'm going on to slide 43. Threshold cleanup authority and oversight. Tell how you will oversee the cleanup. Do you intend to join a state VCP program or voluntary cleanup program? Please include that information if you have a cleanup grant or an RLF. Please include that in your proposal. Very important to us. Again, if you do, that'll give you more points later in your ranking session. For RLF, please provide a legal opinion stating the authority to access or secure a site. Very important. Even in our useful tips, we state that, again, we encourage you to join the state's VCP program, RLF. We encourage you to hire a technical assistant who can oversee your grant, say your nonprofit group, and the person who is overseeing, who's applying for this particular application or proposal, they may not have the necessary environmental experience. So we encourage you to please hire a technical assistant to oversee your borrowers or whomever, subgrantees, whomever. Again, RLF and cleanup, very important that you gain access to adjacent properties or at least have a plan for gaining access to the adjacent properties if it's necessary. If you get out there and you start doing your cleanup and you find out that you need to gain access to Mr. Smith's property, you should already have this plan put forth. And it gives you more points if you have them, at least in the ranking section. It will give you more points if you have that included in your proposal. On to threshold cost share. Remember, Mike spoke of a 20% cost share for cleanup grants and RLF grants. And that 20% is referenced to the federal portion of that grant, which means if you're applying for $200,000 in this cleanup grant, that means you need to submit information or you need to be prepared to show $40,000 worth of cost share. And that cost share can be done in the form of labor, material, or services from a nonprofit source. If you use anything other than monetary sources, we ask that you please make sure that whatever that cost is, that it's an allowable cost per the grant. Applicants may petition for a waiver if you are having hardship or if you are unable to provide the 20% match. You are eligible to request a hardship waiver. Might I add, we'll get into it in the tips, but it's pretty hard. It's pretty difficult. But if you need one, ask for it. Ask for it up front and be able to justify it. Again, useful tips, 20% cost share. You can do it monetarily, labor, materials, services, etc. For RLF applicants, cost share may be passed on to the borrower, which means that when you put up the money, or at least when you propose your application, you can please state in your proposal that this cost will be passed on to your borrower or your subgrantee. On slide 47, legal authority to manage a revolving loan fund. Remember to provide your legal opinion. Please put that in the attachment section. You do not have to put it in the body because that'll take up one of your 18 pages. Put it in the attachment of your proposal. For useful tips, for those who are assessment and cleanup, you'll see these useful tips are not, they don't apply to you. Again, just make sure you attach that legal opinion. And in fact, most of the information that I've covered, starting with slide 41, applies for anyone who's doing cleanup or RLF. So don't get nervous if I've reported something and of course, if you're applying for an assessment grant and it doesn't apply to you, don't get nervous about it. Don't worry about it. If it applies to you, make sure you state it in your proposal. If it doesn't apply to you, don't worry about it. The next section will be your ranking criteria, and Nicole will start that section off.
Thank you, Olga, and good morning again, everyone. Again, I'm Nicole Comic-Bates, and I serve as a Brownfields Project Officer in Region 4 for the states of Mississippi, South Carolina, and North Carolina, and I'm beginning on slide number 49. We're going to discuss the ranking criteria for the assessment, cleanup, and revolving loan fund programs. Now, this is the meat and potatoes of your actual proposal. Let's go on to our next slide, number 50. Here it lists the total points that are possible for each grant type. For assessment grant proposals, you may receive a maximum of 132 points. For your cleanup grants, you can receive up to 127 points. And for the revolving loan fund grant proposals, you may potentially receive 150 points. Each applicant will respond to either 9 or 10 ranking sections, depending on the grant type. And we will discuss those ranking sections in more detail in a moment. Now, you again have a total of 18 pages to thoroughly address each of the criteria. Use those pages to clearly explain your community's environmental story. Let's move on to slide 51. Now, here we would like you to do some homework. Review the epa.gov/Brownfields website and look at the grants that have been awarded in the past. Request a copy of a successful proposal if you think that would help you. but just keep in mind that we want to hear what is unique about your community. So ensure that your responses are specific to your targeted area. If you plan to submit separate hazardous and petroleum proposals, then give specific references to hazardous sites in the hazardous proposal and separate references to petroleum sites in your petroleum proposal. Let's move on to slide 52. Here we're going to discuss our basic level of funding, and that's your assessment grant. Now, Mike has already spoke to you briefly about the general assessment grant program itself, so I won't repeat that to you. I just wanted to again reiterate the types of activities you could do under your assessment program. And those include the inventorying of properties, characterizing your site, assessing those particular sites, and conducting site-specific planning and community involvement and outreach activities. Slide 54. Here, we list the 10 ranking sections or criteria for the assessment grant. Those include the budget, community need, site selection process, sustainable reuse of brownfields, creation and or preservation of green space or open space, pre-award community notification, ongoing community involvement, reduction of threats to human health and the environment, leveraging of additional resources, and programmatic capability. Now, 9 of these criteria are also the same criteria that will be requested for the cleanup and revolving loan fund grant. Only the 3rd criterion, site selection process, is unique to the assessment grant program. Now, the numbers that are listed next to each represent the total possible ranking your proposal may receive for each criterion. So pay particular attention to the highest ranking sections, and those include community need, ongoing community involvement, reduction of threats, and programmatic capability. Those will provide more than half of your total score for your assessment proposals. Here we're going to move on to your actual individual criterion, and Margaret Crow will present that for you.
Good morning. My name is Margaret Crow, and I've been with EPA 17 years. I wanted to cover the ranking criteria on budget, and budgets that include site assessment or cleanup planning activities will be ranked more favorably than those that focus on only inventory or planning activities. So when you give your introduction to your budget, it is a chance to show the evaluator that you're outlining how you intend to spend your funds and that your narrative will provide a basis for each of the tasks. When you're going through your narrative for the budget, you want to stress your program development. You may want to describe travel funds that you will, used to attend annual brownfields conferences. On slide 57, it talks about how important it is to use and justify any equipment. EPA defines equipment as items that cost $5,000 or more with a useful life of 1 year. Usually that kind of equipment is not needed in an assessment grant, so you want to put that in supplies. You may utilize 10% of the grant funds for the following tasks. Monitoring the health of populations, monitoring and enforcement of any institutional controls, and other related program development and implementation activities, such as writing ordinances for local brownfields. But you would need to describe that in the budget. If, as you go through your budget for it, you want to be very descriptive on assessments and you want to detail for the person who's reading your grant that you are linking your budget amounts to specific activities. If you think you may clean up you know, you may have Prop 20 phase ones and an average amount of a certain dollars per phase one. That is an estimate, and it is appropriate to put that estimate in the budget. Reference any in-kind services, such as you can have eligible activities that are allowable that you may be doing with your staff, and include that in the narrative, such as one of those things might be community outreach. So when you're working with your budget, your task might include phase one or phase two assessments. It may include community outreach. It may include health monitoring, and it may include cleanup planning. And you could also include the option to use 10% of your grant funds, but you want to list that under a certain task so you can be very clear on what you're doing. Remember, program expenses associated with report writing, if you're going to have your staff do that as opposed to a hired contractor, you're not going to charge it to the federal funds, then you want to talk about how you're going to utilize that to develop your program. And that's kind of an in-kind activity. But in your budget narrative, indicate your sources of funding if you're leveraging other funds. One of the big categories that Nicole mentioned is to give it's based on community need, which is slide 59. Provide a detailed description of the target community that the project will benefit. You want to give a source on, you know, how you know that your demographics represent your community. You may want the unemployment rate, the poverty rate, the minority rate. You may have special community situations. You want to indicate if anyone speaks Spanish and you need to produce materials in a different language, it's good to mention that. If you don't have communities that need special translation, you might even mention that. You want to explain how targeted communities will benefit from this grant. On slide 60, provide information on difficult conditions in your community, such as environmental justice. You want to explain how the impact of environmental pollution or population or poverty has put a disproportionate amount of adverse health and environmental effects on a particular community. And you may want to do a comparison there. One of the statistics, you might be able to compare areas. Talk about a targeted corridor. If you have a river area that you're targeting within the larger community, if you have a mill community, that helps the person understand in your community need what your statistics are trying to convey. Discuss the impact of closed factories and brownfields, the numbers of job loss. Give the reader a very vibrant feel for the needs in your community by talking about the corridors. Let's say that you have a highway that goes down a community. It's not the entire community, but you could talk about how that community has a lot of warehouses that are not used and how that is not helping your neighborhood. So you may want to give the reader an understanding of where you got your information, how the targeted community will benefit. Will it be an increased tax basis? Will it be a safer, healthier neighborhood? Then you want to describe the environmental and social and economic benefits the communities would enjoy if the brownfield sites were redeveloped. Do you want mixed use in that area? Give the reader an idea that you ask the community or go ask the community and make sure you know that what the redevelopment would, you know, your community wants. Be careful not to have a disconnect between the statistics and the focus area of your project.
So give information on the general population, but make sure you describe a targeted area so the reader can understand. On the characterization or characterizing the impact of brownfields on your community, you want to describe the extent of your brownfields. You know, do you have, is it an acre or is it 11 acres? What's the economic situation? And the environmental impact on that brownfield. So you want to make your reader understand that you know where you are, what kind of, you know, environmental impact. Even if you don't have an inventory, you still want to characterize the community or the targeted area so that they will understand, is it a furniture plant or something, or is it a mill? Some of the useful tips on community needs include looking at the size and number and location of your site. Call your state brownfields coordinator and get a list of former manufacturing sites or underground storage tanks that have been addressed in your area. You know a lot more about your community. You just need to put it on the paper for the person to read it. Describe the negative impacts that potential contaminated properties have had in your neighborhoods. And give a couple examples. You know, we know that maybe a whole community-wide area is not a mill, but if a lot of the, you know, structures there have the same age, it gives a mental picture. Now, in terms of site selection, describe how sites will be selected and what criteria. So you can give a general three or four steps on how you're going to select criteria. And describe the site's eligibility. You know, describe how it's the past inventory activities. Even if you're just starting to, that is an acceptable program activity, but again, grants that do more site assessment and cleanup planning will be viewed perhaps better by an evaluator. If conducting assessments on privately owned properties, it is important that you tell how you're going to access the property and how you will resolve the issues. And also make sure you talk about working with your state or your health department, or, you know, that you're working with a developer, or you will seek out developers, community need, location. Remember, the reviewers are looking for community input for the site selection process. When you mention your targeted corridor, such as, you know, along the river or, you know, at a mill property, even if no inventory exists, get some kind of information that describes that you know how big the problem is and that you are knowledgeable and that you know where you want to go. Most proposal writers do not respond to the access issue. And because it is a ranking criteria, it's written, you know, for the reviewer to look and see, okay, do they have an access issue? So if you say yes or no, then that helps the reviewer evaluate your information appropriately. Include your, if there's incentives for your state for brownfield property owners, put that in there. Discuss access agreements that you will get and way that you will win over prospective owners. Maybe by, you know, if you work with redevelopment, you'll increase the tax base and you'll increase the traffic or you will make a healthy community. So those are the points that you need to draw out for your reviewer. Olga, you ready? She'll do the rest.
Okay. Good morning again. This is Olga. As Margaret and Mike and
Nicole and Kathleen and I have already shared, this proposal is an opportunity for you to paint your vision. I'm going to be covering slides 69 through 81. Here, or at least in slide 69, we'll start with sustainable reuse of brownfields. This section provides up to 12 points for an applicant. Very important section. Very important section. Again, this is where you paint your vision for us to understand. We are trying to find out to what extent will this grant support the goal of your community. How will it prevent pollution? How will it reduce resource consumption? How will it provide clean energy production, alternative stormwater management? Those are the kinds of things that we're looking for. How will it promote economic benefits, job creation, green space, activities like that? Again, we need to know what your vision is for your community. Moving on to slide 70, it asks, this slide asks that you provide a vibrant, it asks that you provide information on how your proposal or how getting this grant is going to provide a vibrant, equitable, and healthy community. What are you planning to do? Are you planning to put a park out there? Are you planning to put affordable housing? Just what is your intention for using this grant to help your community? Those of you who have grants, you've heard us say, we like success. And the better you present your vision for success, the higher your scores will be. In giving you useful tips, please remember to describe how the grant is going to affect the targeted community. Share with us any master plans you may have, any zoning plans or rezoning that you have planned for your community. How is it going to sustain a community that's going to thrive? That's what we're looking for. Respond to each of the focus areas, please. Please, please, please respond to each. If the area, if you're not sure if you're not sure about the city plan or the master plan, get it now. October 12th will come faster than you think. Get it now and look at how it's going to affect the total area, how it's going to affect the targeted community. As we move on to Section E, this area provides 5 points. It's important, but it's not an area that you need to spend a lot of time in. However, we do ask that you describe the extent to which the grant will facilitate that park, that housing development. We ask that you please just give us just a small portion of what kind of green space you have planning, if any, in your community. If you haven't thought about any, now is an excellent time to do so. Operative words here, as you see in on the useful tips, operative word here is the word or. Green space and or nonprofit purpose. Get hung up in the words, but don't get hung up in the words. Don't spend, again, if you have questions regarding what the guideline says, contact one of us or contact your state. If you have a question, just don't spend a whole lot of time just trying to achieve those 5 points. Spend most of your time achieving those major points, please. But do provide us with the information that we need. Be specific about your planning documents, your regulations, and so forth. As we move on to slide 75 under pre-award community notification, We ask that you describe how you will notify or notice the targeted community. What kind of involvement will you have with them? Very important. You'll see that most people who receive Brownfield awards, they get them because they have discussed in their proposal a good plan for communicating with the public. Very important. Again, we like success. We like when we see that the community is involved, that you, it's not governmental entities that's at the top making plans for the community without the community's participation. We don't like to see that. We also want to know, as Margaret mentioned, if you have a large group of minorities in your community and that group happens to speak a different language, whether it be Spanish or whether it be Russian, whatever the case may be, do you intend to publish any of your handouts in any other language besides English? This is an excellent place to put that. In fact, that's where we ask you to put it. So mention it. And you'll see this theme repeated in various sections in this proposal. Again, we want to make sure, or we want to see a complete vision. Useful tips, actual notification prior to the selection process does not have to take place. But we want to see what kind of consideration you have put in through notification. And remember, when we say notify, or you're notifying people, we're looking to see that you have notified not only governmental entities, but also citizens, community groups, neighborhood organizations, groups like that. That's what we're looking for, because we know that in order for the governmental entities to apply, or the applicants to apply, they've notified someone higher in their authority. We want to make sure that you have involved those citizens to every extent possible or viable for you. If you have done so, please attach, if you've had like neighborhood meetings, or if you've had any kind of commission meetings and so forth where you've noticed the public and had an opportunity for them to have a say-so, attach that information. Limit your attachments, but attach what is going to be, is going to clarify the statement that you're going to make. And make sure you reference it, because it's no good if it's in an attachment and we don't know that it's there. Ranking section F, continue, or useful tips, I should say. If a neighborhood association does not exist, mention that. If you don't have, if the surrounding area for you, there's not a neighborhood association or a grassroots group that you cannot notify, let us know that. But be very, very, very sure that you're accurate in there not being a community group for you to notify. Do not simply say, it does not apply to me. It does not apply to this application. Again, we want to know if the public is involved, if you have a large minority community, that you are or are not going to publish this, your documents, I should say, in something other than English. We need to know that. Under ranking section G, that would be slide 78, it's worth 16 points. This area simply asks, what plans do you have for involving the community? What efforts have you made, I should say, to reach the community? Remember, the other one is, what will you do? And this one is, what have you done? What kind of communication do you have ongoing with the public? Here we ask that you describe your specific plans for communicating, or what plans you already have in place for communicating with the public. We also ask that you provide any kind of community list or neighborhood list which you've contacted to let them know what's going on at the site. We even asked for a contact number, a name, a number, and a brief description of that particular organization. Again, we're not looking for those millions for overhead. We're not looking for, oh, well, we recognize the economic development group, or not group, but the economic development portion of the City Planning Commission. That's good to know, but we want to see citizen groups as well. We want to make sure that the public is a viable part of your plan. That those particular proposals score higher in our ranking section. Again, in under helpful tips, do not underestimate the importance of this list of trust. If we ask you for a contact person and a number, we will contact you. Please make sure that you have contacted them before they say, well, I don't know what you're talking about. No one has ever contacted me. That's not going to fare very well for your proposal. Please remember that. Contact each one of the people that you put on your list. Contact them, because EPA will contact them also. Let's see. Moving on to useful tip under slide 81. Specific plans for communicating progress include use of fact sheets, meetings, newspapers, websites, local access channels, and radio, and so forth. Remember that. These are just examples of how you can notify the public and how it can positively affect your proposal. Begin now designing and implementing any plans you have or any strategies that you have. Again, October 12th will come faster than you can imagine. Community notification versus community engagement. Discuss not only how you will inform the community, but also how you will involve them. It is very important. I cannot stress it enough. It's very important that that community is involved in what you do. The more involvement that you paint for us, the higher your score will potentially be. Again, I'm Olga Perry, and I have covered slides 69 through 81. I'm going to pass it now to Brian Hopecroft, who will cover the remaining sections of this presentation. Thank you for your time and your attention.
Hi, everyone. This is Brian Holtzclaw. I'm a project officer here with grants in South Carolina and Florida. It's great to have you on. I'm really excited about a new round of proposals coming in by October 12th. I've got the last three sections for assessment, but if you're on the line thinking cleanup and revolving loan fund, these really pertain to you also. These are three heavyweight sections. They add up to 56 points total. So please pay attention. One of the things I want to say, preface before I get started, is one thing we've witnessed with unsuccessful applicants is they talk in a lot of generalities. We would really love for you to be very specific as possible and relate your discussions under these three sections as well as the rest to your grant target area, to your grant, and not just talking merely general terms. So here we go. Ranking H, reduction of threats, 26 big points. What we're looking for from the guidelines is how and to what extent will the funds be used to identify and or reduce threats to human health and the environment. And then as an aside, if you do know the proposed end use, let us know of, monitoring and maintenance activities. That's usually not the case. And number two, describe how you're working with a local, state, or tribal health agency to ensure protection of public health and the environment. And we do want some discussion on the state that you're in, their VCP program, how you're going to interface. So I'm on slide 84, and to reiterate, this is the one and only highest scoring section of all three grant types, so please ensure enough space. I'm very excited this year we're going to be releasing a tool which helps you calculate the page length, and we'll be having that up in the next 2 days, so please revisit the Cluin site. We've seen actually grants come in with maybe a quarter or a half a page dedicated to this very important section, and we really want you to afford enough space. For community-wide proposals, in this section H, we really want you to talk about how you're going to characterize the sites using phase ones, phase twos, using the ASTM standard, using your environmental consultant to determine the level of contamination and the possible health risks. Now, when it comes to contamination, we really want you to tease out some of the possibilities of contaminants of concern in your community. Even as for community wide, you may in fact have some real life sites. The XYZ manufacturing company closed down, 20 years ago. They were a furniture company and they handled solvents. You don't know much, but at least say certain types of industries have certain associated chemicals. Give an example. Don't just talk in so general terms, even if you're community wide. Pick one or two examples in your community and tease out some scenarios of how you're going to reduce the threat scenario in your targeted area. Also on 84, if it's for petroleum funding, and I will make a plug for this, please make your proposal look different than the hazardous substance proposal. We have a lot of cut and paste of people putting in for two different grants community-wide, and they cut and paste the hazardous substance, and there's really no areas where they talk about petroleum. This is one area you need to talk about petroleum and how you're going to address the reduction of threats. So please focus in on that as the main contaminated concern if it is indeed a petroleum grant. On the next slide, 85, some more tips. If you've done phase two work, that's even better because you can give examples of the type of contaminants which were found by actual testing and even go as far as mention toxic effects. If it's a site that may have had lead, you can talk about their neurotoxicity of lead, and if it's an area, one or two sites that don't have fencing and it has lead exposure and kids like to play over there, go ahead and talk about that and give us a feeling of if you could assess it adequately and subsequently clean it up, this would really benefit the community. That's just one example. Second bullet, in your community needs section, if you indeed describe the benefit of reducing human health risk, make sure you kind of make it congruent, and if you talk about some human health concerns there, make sure you ditto it in this section. It is indeed okay to reference if your local health department has done some health assessment reports and there is a possibility brownfield sites could be affecting the health of residents. It's okay to reference those things. But be sure to relay it back to the target area. If it's a state-based health report, it's really not worth even mentioning. We want to definitely relay it back to your target area. On slide 86, a couple points about the second part of this H2. We really want to hear as an evaluator how you're going to interact with your state brownfields program. At our website, which at the Cluin website, I believe we have all the state contacts posted. But when it comes to brownfields grants, if you haven't had one, it's really critical for you to have their engagement, such as then particularly reviewing your phase two report. So this is the section where you talk about how you're going to have dialogue with your state program, because we really want to see that happen. If you've already had previous state involvement, tell us about that. If you've already had them help you on a cleanup in your community, tell us about that. And if you come at the juncture where a property owner is kind of resistant toward cleaning up a property, you may, you know, play a role in encouraging them to even enlist in a VCP program to benefit your community. Comes to that cleanup stage later on after the assessment. The last bullet talks about our 10% health monitoring. If you've got that listed in the budget, this is the time where you really, really don't need to forget that you did list it in the budget, but reiterate you're going to spend 10% of your funds for health monitoring. Now's the time to contact your health officials. We've got a federal health official, Bob Safe, who's working with us on this particular task. It's a kind of new task for us and some grantees. We've got some pilots. Feel free to call us if you need any advice on that. But we really want you to not just depend on the state, but also local health department. Finalizing the useful tips, if there is indeed sensitive ecosystems, such as I work with in Florida, shallow groundwater tables, that you're definitely going to be sure you're trying to protect, vis-a-vis gaining assessment information and actually conducting the subsequent cleanup, please talk about that. If there's a drinking water intake nearby, if the brownfield abuts next to a pond where kids play, talk to us about that, and mention those connections to brownfields. And subsequently, just wrap up your discussion on how the brownfields cleanup, even though it's the next step, will meet state and federal standards, okay? The leveraging is the next section. It's 10 points. We want you to identify the funds that you're going to use if there's a gap and demonstrate your ability to leverage. For useful tips, start off your discussion in talking about the overall cost that you project for an assessment, and if there's any gaps, tell us that. If you want to be very aggressive about doing subsequent capital improvements or giving an estimate on that, that's fine, that's optional. Also for I-1, tell us about your internal leveraging of resources, FTEs, and as well, if you're pursuing other grants to help your leveraging, tell us about that. You don't necessarily have to have other federal grants or state grants in your back pocket. Just mention the ones that you are indeed intend to pursue. For I-2, external resources, that's similar to what I just said. If you've got a great state incentive program like the state of Florida, they passed a lot of legislation, do a little bit of homework on that and talk about your tax credits and things like that, how you might leverage some benefits for the property owners. The last section is programmatic capability. It's 20 points. And basically we want to see, do you have the right stuff? Okay? I'm not going to go into the details, but 91 spells out the checklist there. We want you to talk about, on 92, your key staff who's going to be in charge on the ground of your grant. Also, telling us a little bit about, you have a formalized procurement process, etc., wouldn't hurt. And if you do have adverse audit findings, be honest and tell us that. Don't presume that if you don't say anything, we will presume that you're free and clear of any adverse audit findings. Just never keep us wondering, okay? And when it comes to other federal agencies or state agencies, it doesn't hurt to maybe build a little table or list them and add them up and give us a total amount. If you're a previous grantee, we want you to brag about your significant accomplishments and leveraging information. As far as the last part of J, there's J3 and J4, and that really only applies if you've, no, it doesn't apply. Three applies if you're a previous recipient. Four, if you're, even if you're brand new. J3, we want you to talk about, you know, your quarterly progress reports. We do ask for quarterly reports, etc. Be honest about if you've had a lot of turnover when you had the grant. You can get into detail on that. We may be forgiving on that as far as your performance. But the last one, J4, it's really important to tell us how you're going to report outcomes to us. There's a website we've listed there. It's based on property profile reporting form, and those are the kind of things we'll be looking for. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it off. We're going to make the big transition from assessment to cleanup and revolving loan fund session, even though there's been a little bit overlap, to Wanda Jennings.
Thanks, Brian. Hello, everyone. My name is Wanda Jennings, and I'm the contact person here in Region 4 for mostly the revolving loan fund grant. The main purpose of my session is to cover both the cleanup and the revolving loan fund ranking element. As Mike had mentioned early on, we fared extremely well in our last grant cycle. We did 31 assessments, 11 cleanup grants, and one revolving loan fund grant. I'm starting on slide 96 of the presentation. The cleanup grant program, and this is just to briefly recap the cleanup grants. Cleanup grants are used to fund individual properties up to $200,000 over a period of 3 years. Due to budget limitations, an entity cannot apply for more than 3 property sites. Your nonprofits can apply, and there's also a 20% cost share requirement. Now, in order to receive a cleanup grant, the applicant must have sole ownership of the property by June 30th of 2008. The revolving loan fund grants recap. Revolving loan fund grants are funded up to $1 million per entity or coalition member over a period of 5 years. As you can see from our slide, recipients may use at least 60% for loans and up to 40% for cleanup subgrants. Like cleanup grants, there's a cost share match requirement of 20%. Now, the revolving loan fund program grants are essentially a 3-tier process. These funds actually flow from EPA onto the grant recipient and then onto the loan of the subgrant recipient. Slide 99. This next slide shows all the ranking elements included in the revolving loan fund and cleanup grant proposals. I am only going to cover the elements that are different from the assessment grant proposal type. With that, I'll talk about the budget, reduction of threats, leveraging, the programmatic capability, and the business plan for the revolving loan fund proposals, and which I'll cover last. Okay, guys, heads up. The ranking elements for the revolving loan fund proposal starts on page 35 of the guidelines. And for cleanups, this is on page 51. There are 10 ranking elements for the revolving loan fund. These are covered under A through J. And 9 for the cleanup grants, A through I. Next slide. This next slide is slide 100. Okay, this slide here just shows the comparison of the two proposal grant types by numerical values. The highest total possible points for a revolving loan fund grant proposal equals 150 points. And for cleanups, this is 127 points. Again, I'm only going to cover both the budget, which is A, elements J, H, and I for cleanups. And if you will notice, these are the same criteria as H, I, and J for the revolving loan fund proposals. I plan to also cover element C, which is the business plan, because it is unique only to the revolving loan fund program. Ranking element A, budget cleanup grant. Okay, this element is worth 10 points, and typical cleanup tasks might include your community involvement, your site cleanup, cleanup planning, and the list goes on. Here's a note. Write this notation down. For cleanup grants, the budget must reflect your 20% cost share. Make sure to include this. Okay, this next slide shows a sample budget format for revolving loan fund grants. Like your cleanup and the assessment, the budget is also worth 10 points. Typical revolving loan fund tasks might include community involvement, establishing a revolving loan fund, marketing the revolving loan fund, operating the revolving loan fund, your cleanup planning, oversight, overseeing your site cleanup. Again, a notation here. Just like your cleanup grant proposal, the revolving loan fund budget must reflect the 20% cost share requirement. And if you are applying for both hazardous substances and petroleum revolving loan fund funding, 4 budget tables must be submitted. Again, I reiterate, 4 tables must be submitted. Useful tips. Useful tips for both proposal types are the same as for assessment, with the exception to the next slide, which is slide 104. Can we please have the, can you please mute that, please?
Hello, this is Wendy Spillane. I believe someone has music playing. If you could, everyone could make sure that they've hit star 6 or the mute button, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Again, I'm on slide 104 of the presentation. Budget. Useful tips. For revolving loan fund grant proposals, if the applicant plans to make loans as well as sub-grants, then they must submit 2 separate budgets showing loan pool budget tasks as well as sub-grant pool budget tasks. Don't put all your programmatic costs under the loan budget. Show your programmatic expenditures also under your sub-grant budget as well. Also, I cannot emphasize this more, please double-check your math. Make sure all your rows and your columns add up to the amount requested plus your match share, especially when you're having multiple budget tables. You'd be surprised how many other regions take off for stuff not adding up correctly. So please do your math. Ranking B through F. For ranking elements B through F, cleanup proposals, and C through G, revolving loan fund proposals, I'm going to defer you back to the assessment rankings because these are essentially the same. And I plan not to cover these those elements here. They have already been discussed. Next slide. I'm under slide 106. Now, this next slide brings us to ranking G, which is the reduction of threats. This is element G for cleanup proposals and H for the revolving loan fund. This element is worth 27 points for cleanup and 26 points for revolving loan funds. Sub-element 3 is unique to the cleanup grants only. Here in sub-element 3, we want you to describe your proposed cleanup plan and your estimated cost to complete the cleanup. What are your known contempt of concerns? What are the known perceived risks and the costs associated with what is known? This is what we're looking for you to respond to. Slide 107. Leveraging of additional resources is ranking element H for cleanup and I for revolving loan fund. Both are worth 10 points. These are 2 sub-elements. Let me backtrack. There are 2 sub-elements under this criteria. Sub-element 1 is unique to revolving loan fund proposal. It takes a commitment at every level make the Revolving Loan Fund program work. You truly have to be dedicated and willing to succeed. And a big part of this is obtaining additional funds to complete most of all of your cleanup projects. Programmatic capability. This element is worth 20 points for both proposal types. This is ranking element I for cleanup and J for revolving loan fund. With respect to the cleanup proposals, sub-elements 1 through 4 are the same as for the assessment ranking. With the revolving loan fund proposal, this element is called programmatic capability / management structure. The second sentence and sub-element J1 is unique to the revolving loan fund proposal only. Okay, here, if you plan to hire a fund manager or an environmental expert, please describe this relationship and the type of agreement plan. That's what we're looking for under element J1. Ranking element C, your business plan. This is the last element I'll talk about, and it pertains only to the revolving loan fund proposals. This element is what can make or break you securing a revolving loan fund grant. As you will see, it is worth 24 points with 4 sub-elements. Okay, here in sub-element C1 and 2, we are looking for you to tell us about your loan and your sub-grant products you plan to offer. Describe your market. Are you marketing your program for developers, small businesses, locals, etc.? And also tell us, if known, the type of sites you plan to address. Are you looking at addressing abandoned gas stations, industrial sites, commercial sites, and the list goes on. For sub-element C3, describe your plan for sub-grants. If you plan a sub-grant, will your sub-grant agreements be tied to loans? For sub-element C4, tell us your management and operational teams that will oversee and implement this revolving loan fund grant. At least 50% of a single staff person time is mandatory for the first 2 years of the revolving loan fund grant management. Useful tips, slide 111. Know what you're getting into first before applying. Talk to successful grantees in the region as well as outside of Region 4. And let me just say this lastly. Please put some thought into your responses. Don't just regurgitate what is in our guidelines. Really think about what you're writing. If you think that all of this is about writing competitively, guess what? It is. A competitive written proposal is usually a winning proposal. This concludes my part, the next slide I've already talked about. So now at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Mike for wrap-up and for Q&A. And thank you for your time.
Thanks, Wanda, and thanks to all the previous speakers as well. Before I get into wrapping up these slides, I just want to mention that you can post questions with the question mark icon on the top of your screen if you're online. And I think we've only got one question pending, so it would be nice to get the questions written. We can either respond to them here on the phone or after the call. We can also respond to them in writing if they're more complex questions. But moving right on into it on slide 114, it's important to go ahead and begin drafting your proposal or improving on edits of a previous proposal that you might have drafted or might have submitted in the previous year. And if you're going to be preparing to propose for a cleanup grant or a site-specific assessment grant, start thinking about which site or sites you're going to apply for. If you have any kinds of questions, including site eligibility questions, contact us. My number, again, and email information is in the guidelines. A couple of slides from now we'll give you the names of many of the presenters along with their phone numbers and contact information. If you've got partners,
that are going to be working with you, or others that are going to be providing review of your proposals, start talking to them. We also posted information on where you can find previous winning proposal writers, previous winning applicants, and get with them and get with and talk to them about their proposals, review their proposals, and get some ideas from them. If you're going to be applying for a petroleum assessment or site specific or cleanup, site specific petroleum or cleanup, get the site specific eligibility determinations from the states. We'd like to request that you do that. Also, be sure to get an acknowledgement letter from the state before you submit your proposal to us. The slide 115 gives some more information. Again, our Region 4 website, the National Brownfields website, this FLUIN website with some resources and tips for grant writing, and then there's also a plug. I'm going to make a plug today for the National Brownfields Conference in May of 2008. Go to that conference website, and I encourage you to attend. There's a lot of good information, and about 5,000 attendees there, many of whom are either past or present or hopeful Brownfields applicants. We also have question and answers from questions last year. We got a whole lot of questions last year and developed detailed answers to those questions, and they may be useful. Some of those may be some of the same questions you're thinking about asking right now, so it's helpful to go to that web link that's posted at the bottom of that slide. Variety of contacts, again, many of whom have spoken here today, are listed on slide 116. And on 117, I just want to encourage you, after you've looked at the links to the additional resources and listened to our presentation, give us some feedback about how this went and was this helpful to you. And so with that, I will entertain questions. Let me look at the ones that have been written first, and we'll go ahead and try to answer those. I don't know if everybody can see the questions, if everybody's online. I'm going to assume that some of you aren't online, so I'll read the questions for you. Pull that up. Good. First question is, it says, I know that you have targeted brownfield assessment money that is non-competitive, but do you have targeted brownfield cleanup funds that are non-competitive? And the answer to that is no. The statute actually doesn't allow us to do that. It would be a nice thing to do, but we're not able to by law. The second question is, please discuss what are eligible attachments. Is there a limit to attachments? There actually is no limit to attachments. So really, anything that you want to add is eligible. Just keep in mind that we're not really under an obligation to review those attachments. Does anybody want to add anything here?
This is Brian. I'll say one of the things we do is debrief unsuccessful applicants, and I saw one of ours writing a proposal 16 pages long. I always encourage people to use every page up to 18, and then they gave they were 2 pages shy. Then they gave us like almost 100 pages of attachments. So please give us attachments within reason. If you want to expand upon a point, such as who's on your brownfield steering committee, if you've got a local one, if you had a meeting about brownfields, or if you have a vision plan, maybe an executive summary of the redevelopment, or even maps, which are really great. But
make sure they're in black and white, because we do not copy color. If your map does not show well in black and white, we won't know what your point of reference is.
Right. But things that reference, you know, the ranking criteria. I'd rather you spend investment in using all 18 pages and having excellent content and under the respective sections.
And let me also add, if you are adding information, as I indicated in sustainable reuse, please be specific in what it is you want us to review. In your in the body, make sure you reference what specific area and what specific summary you want us to review, because time is very precious to each reviewer. And I guarantee you they're not going to want to spend 4 hours on a proposal trying to figure out what you meant. They're simply going to go by what you said and what they can glance at and get an understanding of. They're not going to take the time. They're not going to take 4 hours to review one proposal. So be clear and concise on what it is you want us to review. That's one of the reasons why Mike is referring to be reasonable in your attachments. Don't give us a 83-page assessment report as your attachment. We're not going to read it. Summarize what you want us to review. When we go to the attachment, it should be highlighted so that we go specifically to what it is you want us to review. Because, again, I guarantee you that reviewer has probably read 5 more proposals in front of you, or maybe they have 5 proposals after you. So they're going to spend as little time as possible reviewing it, but enough time to get what the points that you need.
The next question is, what specifics should the states include in their letters? And that's actually spelled out in the guidelines on page 21. Basically, it's an acknowledgement letter from the state that acknowledging that the state's aware that the applicant is going to conduct assessment activities and is planning to apply for federal grant funds. It has to be a current letter. It can't be a letter from the previous year. If you applied previously, you can't use the same letter from last year. Be aware of that you'll have to request that from the state. And to the applicants, on behalf of our states, they ask that as early as possible you contact them with the fact that you're going to be making a proposal so that they can prepare that letter. They're often getting these requests at the last minute, and it could make for a situation where your application may not arrive in time. So I would encourage you to go ahead and contact your state now if you plan to apply.
And I will add, the state list of contacts should be at the CLUIN site, so you can reference that directory of state contacts.
Okay. The next question is, can costs for acquiring properties be considered as the 20% matching requirement? How about infrastructure improvements to the neighborhood? And I think we'll just answer that in writing. There's a couple of issues there, so we'll defer that and provide a written response on that one. The next question is, would a 4-block area be considered a site-specific assessment application? And the answer really is it could be, but I would actually encourage you to do it community-wide. There are a lot of benefits to applying community-wide. A couple of them that come to mind right off hand are the fact that you don't have to spend a lot of your limited pages going into detail about the site for threshold eligibility determinations. We can do that later if you're selected. The other is that in the event that you don't own the property and can't gain access to it, if you actually apply site-specifically and are selected site-specifically and don't gain access to the property, then you can't switch the grant. So I would, by virtue of those two issues, I would encourage you to go ahead and apply community-wide instead.
Yeah, for what people may not have heard, you can't switch the site, you know. If one site does not fare well, like access, or the community changes mind is, oh, that's not a priority for us anymore, guess what? You've got to give us the money back. So that's why I think the community-wise is so popular. You don't have to lock in what site you're going to do the assessment work on. It does give you more flexibility.
Okay. The next question is, please repeat conference information. I'm assuming that's the Brownfields 2008 conference, and the website for that is www.brownfields2008.org. Go there and you can find the information on registering for the conference. There is not a conference agenda set just yet. They are working on that right now, and basically they have the days scheduled, and if you're desiring to be an exhibitor, they're taking exhibitors and sponsors right now. So it's still in the early stages of planning.
One of the things we were kicking around, if you do get selected for a grant in March, we would try to do our best to have that as an allowable pre-award cost. So there may be a possibility you may be able to go under the auspices of this grant funding. But we'll be working towards that goal in mind.
Okay.
Also, on slide 115, you can find that website address and UN information as well.
Okay, thanks. And then the final question that we've got is, are fees to the state voluntary cleanup program for review and participation an eligible budget item? And the answer is yes, they are. Most states or many states require a fee to get into their program. So those are eligible costs. Do we want to open it up for verbal questions now? Okay.
I have a question. This is Andy Shivers from Tennessee. I noticed the application date is October 12th, which is normally celebrated as Columbus Day by the federal government, and you have to be postmarked on that date. Is that going to be a problem?
I guess I need to look at the calendar, Andy. We take the holiday, the actual holiday when the post office wouldn't be working would be that Monday. It's not always celebrated on the actual day, on the actual 12th.
Okay.
Other questions?
Hello, this is Scott Skinner in Jacksonville. I wanted to confirm, can the cleanup grant be used for remedial action planning?
For actually developing the plan, analyzing alternatives?
Yes.
Yeah. Other questions?
This is Scott again. I have another question. I was curious why, if you want to get a grant just for petroleum cleanup, why an applicant must get a letter from the state agency confirming that situation when you don't request the same kind of letter for sites that are known or may have contamination from hazardous substances?
Well, that's actually an issue that we've been working on quite extensively. Basically, the liability scheme, the Brownfields law is an amendment to Superfund CERCLA law, and so hazardous substance liability is pretty well spelled out in CERCLA, and the Brownfields law did provide for certain liability clarifications and relief. Basically, if you acquire the property after the date of the law and you conducted all appropriate inquiry and whatnot, there are certain provisions in the law that basically spell out whether you are a potentially responsible party. On the other hand, the petroleum part of it, realize that CERCLA has a petroleum exemption to it as a whole. So the liability scheme, there is no liability scheme in CERCLA for petroleum. Many states, all states have underground storage tank programs. They have other programs that deal with petroleum cleanup. And because of that, and because of the likelihood that you would be working under a state program, we ask and encourage that you contact the state, make the eligibility determination. They are free to make that eligibility determination in any way that they so desire, and we generally accept their eligibility determination. If you don't contact them, well, you're actually required to contact them in the proposal guidelines. If they're not able to get back with you or not able to make an eligibility determination, we have to do it ourselves. Other questions?
Hi, this is Wendy Spillane. I don't have a question. I just wanted to encourage everyone to fill out the feedback form that's on the home page, and it'll actually have a button called feedback, just because we're trying to continuously improve this workshop to, you know, better help the applicants, and also to remind everybody that if they'd either want to listen through again, there'll be another CLUIN workshop on September 13th, and or also if you want to share the information about this presentation.
Thanks, Wendy. Are there other questions? We got about 9 minutes left.
This is Brian. I would like to encourage us, if you saw some benefit from here, this workshop, and have some neighbors down the next city over, town over, we greatly encourage you to pass it on about the September 13th workshop. We'd love to get a good fair share of quality proposals in. As was disclosed last year, we had about 13% of the national pie. We're third place behind Region 1 and Region 5, who got 55% of all the award-winning grants and 55% of the money, just about. The South is a big 8 state area. We have 19% of the population, so we'd sure love to try to get at least 19% of the proposals and winning grants. We're trying to work toward that by putting on these workshops. And again, I underscore Wendy's request for feedback. We'd love to know what you think about this format, and encourage you to call us with any questions.
Also, there are other, if you want to go to a face-to-face presentation, there are other presentations that are being held. You can contact your EPA state representative to inquire about that. But I will say for the state of Georgia, there is a presentation that will be held on September 17th in Augusta, Georgia, done by the Georgia Brownfield Association, and there's a presentation that will be held in Jekyll Island September 24th and 25th. If you are interested in either one of those presentations, you may contact me, Olga Perry, at 404-562-8534.
And I'll make a plug for Central Florida. We'll have a face-to-face workshop similar to this, September 7th, that's a Friday, in Kissimmee. And this is Brian Holtzclaw. You can call me as well. My contact information is on one of the last slides.
And I know that Kentucky has another one scheduled. I don't know if anyone from Kentucky is on the phone and wants to bring that up, and or any of the other states that might be on the call right now, if you want to mention if you've got anything coming up.
This is Herb Pettigee with Kentucky. We've already done some workshops, but we're going to have a grant review party September 25th, where we're going to get all our grantee applicants together and do some peer review. So anyone else listening in from Kentucky, that's September 25th.
Thanks, Herb.
You're welcome.
And, Herb, you make an excellent point. One of the great things about the Northeast and then the Midwest is they do a lot of great peer review and networking of their proposals. So the extent you can call up one of these successful grant proposal applicants and just ask them politely if that you could look over it, Have your own grant writing party, okay? Because peer review and constructive criticism is really where it's at to get every point that you deserve on these proposals, and we sure would love as many people as possible have successful versus unsuccessful proposals.
Okay. If there are any other states on the line that have anything planned between now and October 12th, if y'all would mention that, I'd appreciate it. Okay. Are there other questions? All right, hearing none, we've got one that we'll post online within the next 48 hours, and I appreciate everybody's participation in this call, and I hope you got a lot out of it, and we look forward to seeing some winning proposals from all of you. Thanks.